I'm Brittany French.
Hey, I'm Rob McDonald.
And this is the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast.
We're going to talk about everything from fishing and hunting to hiking, paddling, and adventures on the Great Plains. We'll cover it all here.
So join us each episode and hear what's going on in the great outdoors on the Great Plains. Welcome to another episode of the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. Here we are in February. How the heck did that happen? It's definitely wintertime out there. Cold temps are, you know, definitely scooching across the Great Plains, and even some snow. We are experiencing some of that right now here in Kansas. And I think we've now had two snow days for our kids in schools. My sweet little puppy is getting to experience the snow for the first time. And let me tell you, she's not a fan. My husband spent about 45 minutes, I guess, sweeping snow off the grass for her. Number one dog dad. Turns out still doesn't care for the snow.
That's the definition of spoiled.
Just a little. That's okay, though. That's okay. Rob, I hope you're staying warm out there. How are you doing?
You know, I've been putting in some catch-up work trying to get our firewood pile back into shape. So we heat quite a little bit with firewood. And when hunting season kicks off, I better have a pretty good supply, because somehow all of my hunting adventures seem to trim down the firewood stock without much replenishment. But there has been this is our second snow day. So by the time this podcast airs, I imagine the kids will be back to school, but this is our second snow day, and I know of two young men for sure that were pretty excited to have a couple back-to-back snow days that live in my house.
Lots of sleeping in and movie watching.
Helping grandpa feed cows. That's a lot of fun.
And, good.
Maybe do some sledding and so just to get to hang out by the fireplace too is pretty fun.
You got to love that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know. Love that.
Well, with most of the hunting opportunity closing up across the Great Plains, we'll just give that a moment of silence, especially for Rob to grieve that.
That's right. Pause for word of grief. Yeah.
A lot of us folks are thinking towards springtime and warmer temperatures. I know I sure am at this point, but I think spring's a little ways off, and I think old Phil the groundhog saw a shadow the other day and proved that we will have 6 more weeks of winter.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So one wintertime activity that might not be on everyone's radar, just due to maybe not having the experience or how to do it, is wintertime fishing. Believe it or not, angling in the dead of winter can be pretty productive and fun, as long as you have enough layers on. I will add that in there. Our guest today is an avid angler, really, no matter what the weather. David Harrison is a regular contributor to In Fisherman magazine, and he's not going to let a little cold weather keep him from catching some fish.
Yeah, welcome to the podcast, David. I know Brittany and I are super excited that you could join us, and I also know that we've been looking forward to hearing about wintertime angling opportunities out there on the Great Plains. So if you don't mind, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, a little introduction, and then let's jump into some of these hot tips for the cold water.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the podcast. My name's David Harrison. I've been writing articles for the In Fisherman for over a decade now, and a few other magazines here and there. I grew up in Macomb, Illinois, and then went to high school in Wichita, Kansas. So, and then after that, moved to Denver. So I've spent 10 or 15 years in Denver, and then 5 years ago moved to Lawrence, Kansas. So I've experienced a lot of different areas across the Midwest. And what really happened is, you know, in Colorado, a lot of more of the lakes and especially the mountain reservoirs freeze. And that's really where I got started in ice fishing. And then it's fascinating the different fishing practices, we'll say, even between Wichita and Lawrence. You know, Lawrence is really close to that ice belt. We had ice all the way across Clinton Reservoir a couple of weeks ago, and then that's just now, you know, leaving, but then maybe coming back this weekend as we have some cold temperatures again. And what I never really experienced until the last 5 years was, you know, the supreme, you know, the excellent crappie bite in the winter as these fish school up. And I'm going to walk you through a little bit how that, you know, how I learned how this technique works, you know, as an experienced angler, but also maybe, you know, get you excited about getting out on the boat, you know, even in January and February.
Yeah. So you mentioned crappie in particular, and I think maybe that's the fish that, at least I do in my mind, that I get excited about. You know, there's that springtime crappie spawn, right? That everybody's like, oh, you know, short water crappie and, you know, fishing every cast when you get into them. But I think more and more people are getting turned on to that winter stage crappie, right? And how they stack up on structure. And so, yeah, if you don't mind, talk to that winter fish habits, and maybe it's different between largemouth and bluegill and crappie and catfish. Heck, I don't know. So, you know, what do you see there, those habits and the types of fish and how they respond differently?
Yeah. So imagine yourself, you know, you're a cold-blooded animal fish. And you're stuck in this water, your metabolism is slower, so you don't need to eat as much. But also think about the different fish species. I usually gauge each fish species by the temperature it prefers to spawn at. So here in Kansas, you know, walleye are some of the earliest to spawn. They're kind of the coldest water species we have. And then white bass, and then black bass, so largemouth and smallmouth, and crappie are in there. And then the catfish are later in the summer, you know, so then each one of those then has a preference for this cold water. So the walleyes are still very active. But of course, you know, here in Kansas, we don't have huge walleye populations. We have lots of other fish, so it's really hard to identify if it's a walleye on sonar, even with live scope. And we just don't have a lot of anglers that chase them throughout the winter. So it's kind of hard to find those. Same thing with bass. They spread out. They're no longer in certain spots. Smallmouth go to deep structure because they're chasing shad instead of crawdads. But again, we don't have a lot of anglers that are you know, focusing on them. Of course, there's bass tournaments all winter here in Kansas at Lacine. In fact, some of the best tournaments are actually in the winter. And I think the Backlashers Club has one every week throughout the winter at Lacine, which is a power plant lake that then, of course, stays open with slightly warmer water in parts of the lake. So the real key to understanding the winter, though, is the shad. So I talked about all those species, but shad are really, they're on the edge of survival. They do not like really cold water. That's why we sometimes see a shad die off in the spring. They are just there for anything that they're just swimming around.
So for our listeners that maybe aren't anglers, or maybe they've been throwing a bobber and some nightcrawler or something, or the shad. So let's identify what we're talking about, right? A bait fish. Are there more than one species of shad in Kansas? How big do those get? You know, population, you say a die-off, is that, you know, 100 fish in a body of water, or is that, you know, 1,000? You know, what are we talking about there?
Yeah. And it's funny because nobody writes articles about shad. So shad are the main bait fish species here in Kansas. As you move up the Great Plains, you'll get into perch, and there's always bluegill and other, we'll say, smaller, you know, small year, young of the year crappie, and other, you know, things that everything's feeding on. You get more shiners and stuff, but here in Kansas is basically gizzard shad. And gizzard shad spawn in the middle of summer, early summer, and then by August and September, if you've ever been out on the lake in the evening in August and September, all those shad come to the surface, and it's billions of tiny fish, you know, splashing around. And then throughout the year, those shad get chomped on by all the other species. And and they also grow. By now, they're about 7 or 8 centimeters or 2 or 3 inches, 4 inches long, which is interesting because at some point in the winter, those shad grow too big for your average crappie to eat and your average walleye. And that's what drives a lot of the springtime bites, but we're talking wintertime. So now we have shad, you're this small fish that could get eaten by anything. So you decide that you're gonna swim in a school, you know, better your neighbor gets eaten instead of you. And the other thing about shad is they don't see well at night, unlike catfish and walleye, which pretty much can see at night as well as they can during the day. So they're attracted to light, they move, but they also, underwater in the winter, the top layers of water warm up and cool off much more than the depths. So you will not find shad as much near the surface in the winter because, you know, when it, because it's driving the changes in temperature that would kill the shad. So they're going to go a little bit deeper. That's why you see a lot of these fish at 15 to 30 to 60 feet, because the shad are down there where the temperatures are more stable. They don't see the day-to-day fluctuations, and they'll eventually get used to the temperature, and they can survive better. So we have big schools of shad, and we have they're a little bit deeper water. So that explains then why these crappies, especially the bigger ones, you know, the ones that we can angle for, not the 4-inchers, are in deeper areas. And the crappies have the same problem. They school up because they could get eaten by catfish or other, a flathead or something like that. So now we have schools of crappies in a certain depth range, you know, 15 to 30 feet. And that makes them easy as anglers to target. So we can drive around with our sonars, and the sonars don't work as well in 5 feet of water, but they work great in 10 feet and below. And you can see these schools of crappies fairly easily. The more we use the active sonar, like the Garmin LiveScope, we can watch how these crappie schools move and change. But in general, in the winter, that you find a spot and you can go back to that spot for a few weeks or a month, and they're going to be around there. And I think that's really the attraction. If you're going to put up with the cold on a boat, then you might as well be catching fish. And in this case, since it's a big school, you don't need to move the boat much. You put your lure down there and sometimes a 10-foot deep school of fish, and just wait for the bite. And then put it back down there and catch another one, and put it back down there and catch another one.
Yeah. So Brittany, you know, we were talking there before we started recording about some trips that Dave and I have been on together. And that first experience that I had where he shared that LiveScope technology with me through the ice was really pretty amazing. I mean, we were on a small agriculture pond and bored a hole, stuck the LiveScope through the ice and started panning around horizontally across the water. And it was like, oh, look, there's a school of fish. I don't know what it was, 15 feet that direction, pace off the distance, stick a hole down, you know, auger hole through the ice, stick the electronics in. And it's like, oh, yep, there they are. And then you those, like, just as he mentioned, those fish were all schooled up, and you just start sorting through them with your jig. And it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's like, it's very easy to picture that, but I'm sure it's one thing to actually experience it. It's got to be incredible.
Pretty cool stuff.
I love it.
So, David, for our listeners that are like, all right, shad, walleye, crappie, you know, I know, I think you sent me a picture here just maybe a week ago. You were catching blue cats. How do they go about it? You know, if you said, I'm interested, you know, deer season's over, upland season's over, I want to get out. I'm interested in this wintertime fishing. Now what? What do I do?
Sure. So there are guides that really take people out a lot of every day. Joe Bragg is one at Milford, you know, that we meet with a lot. Of course, Brian Andreka with Kansas Angling Experience. You can watch all of his videos, how many crappies he's caught this week, etc. It is an easy time of the year for the guides, and it is a great time for, like I said, if it's a nice day, you know, this is the benefit of being on the ice not in the ice belt, but on the edge of the ice belt, is we have a lot of nice days out there, lower wind, decent temperatures if you have the right gear, and most people that do winter outdoors, especially hunters, have the gear and can get out there. And if you can hold a rod, you can catch a fish at this time of year. And it's a great combination. The catfish, they're also pretty sluggish, but a big fish has got to eat. And you put a bait right in front of it, which you can do with live scope or even, traditional sonar, they will eventually bite it. And so on. Then it comes down to boat control and finding the catfish that are spread out. They are actually oftentimes a little bit even deeper than the crappies. The ones I were catching was 30 to 60 feet of water in some of these reservoirs. In a reservoir where the max depth, like a Clinton, is only 35 or 40 feet, a lot of them will settle down into those deeper channels. And boaters don't spend a lot of time driving over those areas. But in the winter, you'll see a lot of fish down there. And it's been fascinating to watch. I have a lot of groups I fish with, and a lot of people I talk with. And, most of them are not exploring some of these bites or really, it's tough to leave crappie to catch something else. But, all these other fish are out there. And a story from Colorado, even though a lot of lakes there ice over, in the winter, it was all walleye. So we would have 1,000-acre lake with 20 boats on it, all chasing walleye. That kind of, we'll say, gang mentality makes it easy to chase them. Well, I went to Clinton a few weeks ago, and the boat ramp was full. Well, they're all the ones chasing crappies, right? So there's no one out there chasing walleyes or a lot of catfish or some of these other species. And that's a lot of the difference here in Kansas is if everybody's chasing crappie, we'll actually lose track of where some of those other species are. So it's been fascinating to watch those cultural differences. And, if you get a small group that will try and find them and communicates well, those other species are available too.
Interesting. That's I've never really thought about that perspective of anglers sort of working. I mean, you're almost talking about not choreographing that as a team, so to speak, but, I have seen that you pull into the boat ramp and, oh, I see Bob's here. I see Joe's here, whatever. And that they're predominantly maybe a crappie angler or a bass fisherman in the summertime. And so to see where they're at on the water, I could definitely see that, for these other species. That's interesting. One thing I wanted to touch on just a little bit with you while we had you, David, was, I know you do some traveling, exploring other opportunities in other states on the Great Plains. And I think last year you were up like Valentine, Nebraska area, some of those sandhill lakes, and other fish up there, like yellow perch maybe, or pike. I don't remember exactly what you're after, but maybe share a little bit of some of those adventures and things, maybe. If you were going to make a road trip, I don't know what the ice looks like in South Dakota, North Dakota, being a Kansas guy, how late that is going to look. And then two, I've been, my angling experience has been a lot of keyed in, okay, it's time to go after the white bass because it's going to be easy for white bass right now, during that spawn time. And when the white bass are done, now I'm going to chase crappie because it's going to be easy for crappie. And a lot of, let's put some fish in the freezer because we eat a lot of fish. But when that ice gets off, I guess, what are the best angling opportunities? Because I've heard it said, and maybe it's wrong, but I've heard it said, that's one of the better times to get after some of these fish. So, where you've been, some experiences, some fun things to think about if you're willing to travel a little bit, and then what are your thoughts about this ice off that's kind of imminent, if you live just a little bit even north of where you're at in Lawrence?
I mean, so Colorado really ruined me for ice fishing. I'm a really big fan of ice fishing. It is fun. It is a fantastic experience. It's totally different than being on a boat. It has advantages and disadvantages, and we can go through those. When I used to do talks at Cabela's and the boat show, like the Topeka boat show, I would talk about ice fishing, and the best way to get involved, of course, is to have someone take you. You know, don't just walk out on there on the ice. I've seen that happen already a couple times this year. Not people going through, but people on ice that I wouldn't mess with. you know, have that experience. One of the easiest ones is to go up to Minnesota, Lake of the Woods, Ballard's and Arnoldson's have, it's like full service. They you get in a heated tracked vehicle. They take you out to a preheated little shack that's on a hole, that's on the best fishing they can put together. Then they come and pick you up and they bring you back and you eat in the lodge, you know, with 300 other, you know, happy anglers. I mean, they actually run a bus trip from Topeka up there every year. It's called the Walleye Connection. And I don't know with COVID if it's still running, but I have other friends that go up there for the experience every year. And this year, each shack averaged 30 walleye a day with one over 20 inches. And just that type of action will get you hooked on the sport faster than anything. Once you get into it yourself, then it's 3.5 hours into southern Iowa or up into, you know, Omaha has a lot of urban lakes. Wanahoo is another one in between Lincoln and Omaha. Mm-hmm. And there's a guide up there. It's the DAB service fishing guide, and I think his name is Dean. He's another great place to do an introduction. They catch a lot of different fish. These are small lakes that Omaha has built because Omaha is a rapidly growing city. Sure. And they actually design them for ice fishing and give you all the coordinates of the brush piles, and they put all sorts of stuff in the bottom of the lake to attract fish.
Interesting. So are any of those I've read about borrow pits where they're coming in and taking sand out for road constructions? I think the state of Iowa has some program around that.
Not really. I think more of it's just urban reservoirs. They're a lot like our community lakes, you know, here in Kansas. But they just put in this extra work to make it an attractive place to go fishing, learn how to fish. You know, they're not very big, so they're very accessible. They know they freeze in the winter. They become just a community place. They put, of course, a path around it, make a walkable, and just a resource for the whole city. But for us, you know, maybe even a destination to get up there, and you're going to find those fish pretty quickly in a small pond when it's iced over.
Yeah.
So, you know, to dive into the differences between ice fishing and boating, you know, think about this. If all those crappie that I just explained are in big schools or maybe on a brush pile, if you have to hover your boat over, even with spot lock, you know, which is the electronic anchoring that your trolling motor can do these days, your boat is moving around. Plus, you know, on a boat, you don't really get a heater. It's not always safe. So I would rather be right on the ice where I can drill one hole on top of this school and fish and not have to move. I can take my little sled and pop over a clam shelter out there, and then maybe even put a heater in there, so I'm good at any temperature. And that's the advantage. The other thing in Kansas is you can use 8 tip ups. And you know, that's where you and I, Rob, we went to your lake and we had 4 of us with the kids. I don't even own that many tip ups. I don't know how many we put out, probably 12 or 15. I mean, imagine basically one huge bobber in every, you know, every corner of this lake. And then we were able to put bait down there for what, 6 hours? And you know, that's how we caught some of these big bass. They came about a shiner that's on a hook down there, and it's been down there. It's almost like a trot line at some point. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, the other fascinating idea, think about this, is the underwater camera. You know, we could put a camera down that hole, watch that bait for 6 hours, and really be able to see something that you would never be able to observe from boat, you know, in 30 or 40 feet of water or 10 feet, you know, especially with the water clarity we have here. You know, one of the draws of fishing in Colorado, you can actually see the trout come under your hole and bite your lure in up to 20 feet of water.
Wow.
That's an experience. It's like fishing in an aquarium at some point. And, you know, the spearing houses in other parts of the country is kind of the same deal, you know, watching the fish in their environment. is definitely facilitated by the ice. So there's just a lot of adventures that open up. You know, one of the things we hadn't seen last year was how do these panfish and bass and catfish really work in a farm pond? And if you fish that pond all summer, you start to understand where they are. But, you know, Rob, we were able to put that live scope down there and watch these schools of crappie and bluegill move around. And they move a lot more than you think. They were all in the deeper part of the pond. And then we set up a big, you know, cabin with my uncles in there, the grumpy old men. And you know, after what, an hour and a half, 2 hours, we caught fish, you know, pretty regularly. They moved, you know, they would not come under our tent. And I don't know if that's from the shadow or we were making too much noise or whatever, but, you know, you and I had to drill other parts of the lake to catch them. And really, I don't think my uncles really saw much more.
Yeah,
so it's kind of set off.
Yeah, we chased them around. They were still catchable fish, but yeah, they were moving away from where the school was kind of getting hammered there. It was interesting.
Yeah, and I think the second biggest bass we caught on your pond came on actually a beadhead fly
mm-hmm.
in 20 feet of water. So because the ice isn't moving, I can use a 20-inch rod with a strike indicator on the end, 4-pound test. And a tiny, I think it's a size 12 beadhead fly. So essentially yeah. Something you'd use fly fishing. One, I can drop it down there. And because ice isn't moving, I have complete control over that. Even with standard sonar, I can see if something comes up and looks at it. And we have a saying in ice fishing, if you're lured, you know, if three fish come in and look at your lure and leave, then it's time to change. So you would never get that open water fishing to know whether the fish mm-hmm. ignored your lure. And then we caught a 19-inch bass on this fly. I mean, just fascinating what they are eating and how you can control it and then see them pay attention to it or skip it or come up and look at it and leave. Or in this case, oh my gosh, I have a bite. And, you know, it's a 20-inch ultralight rod. Yeah. In 20 feet of water.
So for some perspective, for those listeners that maybe aren't fly fishermen or women, this beadhead fly, I would say, was about the size of the pupil within the eyeball of the fish that ate it. So you've got a fish, right, 19 inches or whatever, 20-inch fish essentially, that through that little hole in the ice, you know, David was angling for, and it decided to, you know, I think the target was probably crappie and bluegill, right? I mean, it's something that they're going to eat.
We even caught that golden shiner, I think, or something.
Yeah. We caught golden shiner forage fish, you know, which was less surprising to me at least than this big, you know, in that body of water. That was one of the key predators, right? That was the megalodon of the farm pond. And it chose to eat this little tiny beadhead fly. And David was pretty ecstatic. Yeah, I remember him getting that thing up to where it's like, I don't know what I got. It's got to be like a carp or a channel cat or something. And finally got a look at that thing. It's like, you got to be kidding me. This big old bass ate that tiny little fly.
Yep.
That's awesome.
So then I
really wanted to go back to, though, you know, one of the big things I work on is learning to fish. I mean, I don't write these articles for nothing, but I, you know, I grew up reading, you know, every article I could on fishing. And this is, you know, pre-internet, you get like one a week. You know, now you can watch videos for the rest of your life if you want it. It's fascinating, the difference. But just, you can't just read an article and then go out there and do this stuff. And I wanted to give an example because, so I moved here from Colorado. I caught three crappies in 15 years in Colorado. So I'm not a crappie angler. I caught zero catfish, even though we tried. There just aren't as many. And like I said, people aren't chasing them. You know, kind of the opposite of here in Kansas. But here in Kansas, our two major resources for fishing are truthfully the crappie and the catfish. I mean, that's what people come to Kansas to catch, and so on. So I'm here. I gave a talk at Cabela's. I, I'm, I, I drove down there from Lawrence with Brian Andreka, and he's telling me about this crappie bite in the winter. And, you know, and I'm imagining how it works. I'm an experienced angler. I know how to use all my electronics. So my first trip, I go out and I'm like, how do I find these things? Well, some days the lake looks tiny and some days it looks huge. And when you don't know what you're looking for, Clinton is as good as the Atlantic Ocean, right? It's very intimidating to an angler, even an experienced angler like myself. So the other problem I had that day was I don't know what I'm looking for on sonar. I mean, I know what a fish looks like, but is it a school of crappies? Is it bluegill? Is it some, you know, shad? At that point, I didn't necessarily know exactly what a school of shad looked like compared to crappie. And sometimes that's still hard to do. So I'm out there. I eventually found a tree that I thought had crappie on it. And I anchored right above that tree. And this was pre-spotlock. So I was physically anchored. And I put some lures down there for half an hour. I didn't catch anything. So I get out my ice fishing camera because I had it on the boat. And I put that down there. And in the winter, fortunately, it clears up enough, even at Clinton, to see some of that. And I could verify there were crappie there. So I just am not good enough at that point. So I said, well, I'm going to put in another hour. I changed some lures. I figured out ways. You know, the hard part with crappie, if they're not on the bottom, they're somewhere in the middle. So how do you know how deep your lure is without live scope? This is 5 years ago. So, you know, use your sonar, put a bobber stopper, a little string on your line, mark the line 10 feet deep, you know, wherever you're marking these fish on sonar, and then trying to keep the lure, you know, right there at the right depth. And eventually I caught a few out of that tree. and now once I had four or five bites, you know, I've experienced what's going on. And as an angler, then I was able to kind of go in other parts of the lake and recreate that. But it, I have, you know, learning for these basically Kansas style fish versus Colorado, I've been through that same type of fishing day over and over. It's not easy, you know, if you don't have a guide and or a lot of experience. And it's an interesting part of the sport because you can't expect to go out there and even in what we call easy fishing, like in the winter for these crappie, really load the boat the first day. You have to gain those skills and get that experience. Even if you've been told what to do, you read the article, you talk to the guide, it's not easy. But once it happens, then you have that experience for the rest of your life and you build on it. So, you know, I fish once a week, which is still not enough to really follow the fish or, you know, be on top of every pattern. But if you went and tried this for a week long, you know, you would be really good at it by the end of the week. So I usually tell people to cut that learning curve by actually hiring a guide. Mm. It's going to be the best $300 you ever spent for multiple reasons.
I'm glad you mentioned that, David, because as somebody who's never really done much fishing in the winter and not on ice, that can be like just hearing you talk, there's just so much detail and that goes into ice fishing, goes into wintertime fishing. And that was going to be my question to you is how do you think someone who has not ever done this gets started? And obviously your recommendation is, you know, find a guide, find a mentor to kind of show you your way.
And that's actually how I got started at In Fisherman. So I was fishing in Colorado and actually I had just moved and my neighbor had a boat. And at that time I didn't have a boat. I was mainly fly fishing. I had been a fly fishing guide a couple of years before and so on. And I said, hey, let's go fish for pike. And we didn't catch any. And then, you know, so I saw an article for a guide and most of the guides in Colorado are fly fishing guides. And so I had stopped paying attention to guides because I was a pretty experienced fly fisherman, but I wasn't good at boat fishing or reservoir fishing, and especially not for pike. I had caught a few on a fly rod, but only in May. Like I only knew one pattern out of the year. So I went fishing with this guide, and truthfully, those 6 hours, I didn't even fish. I asked him question after question what about this lake? What about that lake? And we did a pike process. We were trolling swim baits and rapalab style stick baits using planer boards, which if you're not a fishing expert, you probably haven't heard of planer boards, something I had never seen in an article before. But he explained why it worked and how he ended up with this process and how often he catches big 40-inch pike and so on. And a week later, I called him up. I said, hey, I think this is an article. I've never read about this, et cetera. We don't write about Colorado very much in the magazines. And sure enough, I pitched it to the End Fisherman, and they said, yeah, write it up and we'll see if it gets published, we'll pay you. And in the end, they really liked it. So it was a combination of just that experience of if you go out with a guide, not only do you get to catch the fish, but you know, the guides understand, you know, a lot of the detail I went on about shad and the seasons and stuff, you know, they will answer those questions. So think of it like a 6-hour lesson in fishing. Mm-hmm. The second thing is it saves you at least the cost of guide trip and tackle, because they're going to tell you what works and what doesn't. And you can literally go and use those four lures probably for another 3 or 4 months until the seasons really change and do just fine. And then maybe do, you know, if you do 4 guide trips in a year, you'll get all the seasons. And now you have like a tiny tackle box, because you really only need those 5 lures, you know, one for each season or whatever they're using. And generally, that pays for the trip in my mind.
Yeah, no kidding. So how do you recommend somebody, you know, not necessarily find a guide? I think there are good platforms to do that. But, you know, say I live somewhere along the Great Plains and I'm looking to get into a group or, you know, obviously a certain magazine like In Fisherman, what kind of resources do you think are most effective and helpful when learning? Because like you mentioned, you can Google anything. And you can spend hours, but that doesn't mean it's the best thing, right? So how would you steer somebody in getting connected with people?
Yeah, actually, you're right. A mentor is just as good. Obviously, someone with a boat and some experience, you know, can really close that learning gap and get you out there. There are people that only hire guides. Like, why buy a boat and maintain it when you're only going to go 4 times a year? But if you've been caught by the fishing bug, right? And that's really what these podcasts go towards. Then you're going to want to do it on your own. You're going to want to learn these skills and have these experiences. You know, a mentor goes a long way. And then it's that time on the water. In Colorado, I had young kids. I went every Tuesday night. I said, hey, you know, wife, you know, I need this to be sane. And so I went from, you know, probably 4 o'clock right after work until midnight, you know, once a week. And that got me, you know, time on the water. And what happens then is that it's the valley of death between watching it and doing it. And I just shared that whole story of what I had to go through to catch my first winter crappie. You have to do that, but you also have to sort out, you know, maybe a video is from Nebraska versus Kansas or South Dakota versus North Dakota or somewhere, you know, this lake versus that lake. And there's different drivers throughout it. I used to run a blog in Colorado where I would take articles from a magazine and adapt them to Colorado, because Colorado has a lot of differences between its reservoirs and other states just because of the desert climate. You know, there aren't many other places you get walleye in the desert. So eventually you get those connections and can make those, but you can't just buy a lure off of watching a video from Florida and then expect it to work here, because the crappie in Florida in May and June or January are spawning. Whereas that won't happen here for another few months.
Well, I don't know about you, Brittany, but I kind of feel like David's been serving us drinks out of a fire hose. This guy is a wealth of knowledge. I think we're going to have him back on maybe to talk about summertime angling when we're looking at 70 and 80 degree water instead of 40 degree water.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I feel like I couldn't even keep up with note-taking on that discussion there. So helpful. But, you know, like we talked about, you know, hunting season might be wrapping up for for right now, but there are great ways to get out there, and this is just one of them.
Absolutely. So, David, I don't know if you're up to it, I think, but like it or not, I've got a lightning round for you, and I know he's the kind of guy that he's very prepared and wants to know what's coming, and he doesn't know any of these questions, and we're going to go quickly and just first thing that comes to your mind, answer the question, and then if you want to expand on a little bit, that, you know, that's definitely welcome. So here we go. Question number one, braided line versus monofilament.
Braided line.
Okay.
Only because I'm cheap and it lasts longer.
Okay. Ice fishing versus open water.
Ice fishing. You don't have to launch the boat. You just walk right out there. You could fish for an hour after work and come back. I used to fish 7 nights a week. As long as I had to be at the daycare pickup by 5:30.
Gotcha. Yeah. Throw all the stuff in the jet sled and head out and then back. Yeah.
Gotcha. Oh, I was out there in loafers and khakis and non-winter coats some nights just for an hour.
Gotcha. Okay. Blue cats versus flatheads.
I think blue cats, but that's only because it's 2022. You know, the department has done such a great job of developing these fisheries for the blue cats. There are so many in these reservoirs, and even Clinton and Perry are starting to fill up with blue cats and Melbourne to the point where it's not just Milford anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, at the same time, you know, if I could hook into a flathead as often as you can, the blue cats, you know, I think I would go to the flatheads.
Okay. I can tell you, I like to eat flathead more than I like to eat blue cat, but you know, it's anecdotal. So bluegill versus crappies.
You know, I grew up on bluegill. That's what I caught as a kid. I'd still, if it weren't for LiveScope, I'd be a crummy, crappy fisherman. So I'll admit that. You know, bluegill pound for pound is the hardest fighting fish out there. And truthfully, the other part is they bite. They're so aggressive, mm-hmm. just like white bass. I mean, the worst thing the thing I get worried about when I launch a boat is, will I find the fish and they won't bite? You do all this work to find them and you put a lure down there and you don't get these bites, and that doesn't happen with bluegill. If you find them, put something down there that's not too big for them, then they're going to bite it.
Yeah. Okay. I like bluegills too. They're kind of like a bulldog. If you had to choose equal opportunity of quality of fish, number of fish per cast, so forth, a small body of water versus a large body of water.
Oh, the small ones. I was talking about learning to fish. You know, these small bodies, the regional lakes, the community lakes, the state fishing lakes are just, that is where you learn. You know, don't go to the reservoirs. I've learned a lot from Shawnee State Fishing Lake on the west side of Topeka this year. You can fish one of these lakes end to end, top to bottom, you know, in a day or two. If you spend a week at one of these lakes, you will figure out where these fish are. All, you know, they list all the species that are in there, and you could take an article on catfishing and drag some baits down the channels and catch something. You could fish the shore for bass. You could find a brush pile for crappie, all within, you know, sometimes you don't even have to turn on a big motor. You could do it from a kayak. You could do it from a Coleman crawdad. I mean, these are the resources. Those little lakes are amazing. And, you know, I would go to them 100% if I didn't want a little bit of challenge sometimes, or the larger blue cats or flatheads from the bigger lakes.
Yeah.
But I've got a lot of flatheads from those little lakes too.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Spinning tackle versus casting tackle.
With the walleye background, I have mostly spinning. Other than trolling rods. But my nephew is in junior high and he is a big bass fisherman. So the last two Christmases, I gave him you know, bass fishing gear, and he gave me bass fishing gear, and like, I'll give him a reel and then he'll give me a rod, and oh no, I need a reel for my rod. So he'll give me a reel. It's been kind of fun. And it, you know, with all the opportunities for kids in fishing these days, you know, you can do bass tournaments for junior high kids where the parents volunteer to drive the boat on plane, but the kids have to operate everything. And if you talk to a seventh grader that's a bass fisherman, you know, they could fill a podcast of wacky versus, you know, shaky head and crankbaits, square bills versus deep divers and stuff, you know, as much as anybody, because they've watched all the videos and been out there a few times.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's fun. Okay. Live bait versus plastics.
It's hard. The hardest part for live bait is going and buying it for me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's not a lot of places. This isn't Minnesota where you go to the bait shop at 5 a.m. to talk to all your friends who are already there. You know, the bait shops are in a gas station or kind of hidden. But you know, I caught a blue cat on a 5-inch goldfish last trip. You know, so while I'm fishing with plastics up front with my live scope, I put out some live bait on the back of the boat. And, you know, at that point, they're basically my tip ups while I'm jigging up front. So I think I'm certainly not leaning one way or the other, but I don't use live bait very often.
Okay. And I know just from knowing you that you're not big on keeping fish. You don't clean a lot of fish. However, you do fish a lot. But if you were to keep fish for the table, you're going to have fried fish, grilled fish, or baked fish in the oven.
My favorite is blackened. So that would be, I have a pan that I use on the grill because it messes up the pan pretty good, but it tastes really good. But my family prefers the baked fish. And when I do fry it, then they're like, oh, this is too greasy. So I guess, you know, they didn't grow up in the time like us when, you know, fish and chips were the deal at every restaurant. Okay. If you want fish.
Very good. I'm curious, you mentioned the blackened fish. Is that your own recipe? You use a certain seasoning? You follow somebody's recipe? But how do we do that?
Yeah, it's the key is that spice. It's, you know, kind of a New Orleans spice mix. Yeah, there's lots of recipes out there. Usually it's kind of spicy. Mm-hmm. And then you put a really hot pan. So if you do it in the house, it makes a lot of smoke.
Yep.
If you do it on the grill, someone actually gave me a super fancy fajita pan, and I decided that would be my blackening pan. And that's what I use. And if, of course, if you do it outside, then it doesn't smoke up your house as much. That's lots of different options there. And then I've done experiments because my family don't know what all the different species are. So one time I caught crappie, walleye, and drum. I put them all together and they can pick out the drum. Yeah, maybe there's different ways to prepare it, but actually one of my favorite is a pretty good sized white bass and turn it into a fish sandwich. Maybe enough fillet of fish at McDonald's. It's thick and it's not as crumbly as crappie. Yep. And if you have that attitude that it's a sandwich, like, and you take all the red meat out of there, then a nice white bass is just that right size for it almost looks like a fillet of fish. Mm-hmm.
So here's the big question then.
All right.
Fillet of fish sandwich. Your David Harrison's now famous white bass fillet of fish sandwich, cheese or no cheese?
Oh, I'm a cheese guy.
Okay, me too.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. All right. It's consensus.
But no tartar sauce. I hate tartar sauce.
Holy cheese listeners. What? Come on, David. You went the wayside.
Ketchup. I like ketchup on everything.
Okay. Okay. We'll allow that.
Okay.
Well, David, how do you, Rob, was that the last question?
Yep, that was it.
Okay, that's what I thought. How do people follow you or get in touch with you, maybe read some of your articles? What's the easiest way to connect with you?
Infisherman.com, in-fisherman.com has some of my articles. I have no idea which ones they put on there or not and how or why they choose them. A lot of my articles are in the guides. So the regular magazine has some articles. maybe one or two a year, but there's different guides for every season. Ice fishing, bass, walleye, and catfish all have separate magazines that are only available on newsstands, which don't exist anymore. So you have to find them at Walmart in Kansas. Up in Nebraska and other places, they're right next to the In Fisherman at the grocery store. And sometimes you'll find them there, or you can order those guides online. My only real social media is called Kansas Fishing Reality. So when I was learning a lot of the fishing details with my friend Nathan Zielinski out in Colorado, you know, as I was learning how to fish for walleye and smallmouth out there, every trip he would answer my phone. And really, I just wanted to know if I was catching as many or half as many as he would as a guide. So that's why I publish Reality. So if I go fishing and catch zero fish, I'm going to post it and I'm going to say what lures I'm using, what colors I'm using. I don't do depths and I don't always list exactly what lake, you know, which, you know, fine. You go to your local lake and find the fish yourself and earn that skill yourself. But, you know, if you have the right lure and the right attitudes, you know, this is working, you know, you at least have some of the pieces of the puzzle. You know, hire a guide to tell you the details of the rest of it. So Kansas Fishing Reality on Facebook, and you'll see almost every trip that I do, how many I'm catching and what I caught them on.
Very cool. Great way to connect with you. And I'm sure you'd be happy to answer any questions folks might have too.
Now, yeah, that would be the other part of it. If anybody has a question on there, you know, I try and answer them. It's not a huge community, as you might guess. But it's what I can do. You know, I'm not a guide. I'm not trying to make other types of money. The writing the articles keeps me really busy. So.
Perfect. Well, David, thanks again so much for agreeing to join us and making time and sharing a wealth of knowledge. You know, I've been fishing with you multiple times and every time we go or just sit down like this, I learn something and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. No problem. I learn something every time I go too.
Hey, that's the point of it, right?
Oh yeah. I don't do a lot of hunting and I drive around enough in the winter to be like, I could see how this would be fun. You see the geese and the ducks right flying around and people hunting at Melvern, you know, shooting at my boat almost, you know, as not really, but it's fascinating. The whole outdoors as an experience, right? It's tough to learn, but every step is fun and you never stop learning.
Absolutely. Well, we hope you all stay warm out there on the Great Plains. And if you don't want to stay warm, get your ice fish on. Don't forget to share our podcast with a friend and give us a follow on social media. And we will see you all next time.
See you guys later.
See you, Rob. Thanks, David.